The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Keep your texts coming in to 51551 and your emails to ray@rte.ie. I'm joined in studio by a Wexford woman. Tanya Turner is here to tell us all about a piece of technology that she hopes is going to change her life. It's not an iPad or an iPhone that we all seem to be banging on about. We're going to hear a little bit more about that in a bit. Good to see you. Thanks a million for coming in.
Same here. Thanks a million, Catherine.
So listen, before we hear your story, tell us a bit about yourself. I called you a Wexford woman, but you actually started life in London City.
I did start life in London. my dad's from England,
yeah,
which I didn't tell that many people in rural Ireland growing up. But I'm proud of you, Dad. And my mum's from Czech Republic.
Okay.
So I sometimes tell people I'm half English, half Czech and 100%
Irish. 100%
Irish.
Yeah. So how did they end up in Wexford?
Well, it was actually moving here to get a house because it was just much easier to live here at the time.
Okay.
Like just house prices wise, really, coming from London.
I'd imagine, yeah. Of course.
So they found a nice little nook in the southeast of Ireland.
Okay, so you grew up in Wexford, idyllic childhood. And then in terms of work, I'm right in saying you've been a teacher. You're training for another career as well, is
yes,
that correct?
I was teaching English for quite a while. I studied languages in Trinity College, French, Russian and a bit of Polish. I just love languages. And luckily I had Czech from when I was a baby, so it helps for the love of that, you know, and makes it easier to learn new languages as well. But yeah, I'm training to be a counsellor now. My ultimate dream for quite a while, before I was amputated and now after as well, a dance therapist eventually with people who have disabilities, because I just think everything's possible.
And did you always love dance?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I did Irish dancing between the age of about 8 and 10.
Okay.
So cycle to the to the hall and do the dancing with my sister. I did ballroom dancing in college.
Wow.
On the side. I absolutely loved it. And then I did salsa dancing as well.
Okay. So dance is a huge passion of yours.
Yeah. It's one of those moments where you think, what's the universe doing? That it's, you know, when it does that thing of, okay, now you're going to have an amputation. So find a new way to deal with it now.
Okay. Okay, well, let's go back. So take me back. It's February 2008.
Mm.
You're in your early 20s. You're working in Dublin.
Yeah.
You're on your bike, going about your day as everybody does.
Absolutely, yeah. I was driving from Drumcondra into the city centre, going into work, and I think there was a van parked a bit
out. You were cycling.
Exactly, yeah. I was cycling. And I mean, that's dangerous at the best of times, but I just swerved and I fell off my bike and I hit my knee and I thought I'd just sprained it. So not having that many sick days, I just went into work.
Okay.
And limped around until one of my friends was on my break, said, you look awful, like you have to go to A&E. And so she went in with me. And yeah, it was actually it's my first boyfriend. The boyfriend at the time, it's his mom who went into the A&E with me.
Okay.
And yeah, she was a huge support. But the x-ray that they did came back with a tumour. So a really big tumour in my knee, actually. And I had no idea. I had had pains in my legs, but I thought it was from all the dancing and lots of sport and like sort of activity in that.
Oh my God. So you're literally in thinking you've twisted or you have a sprain.
Yes.
And then this comes back. Like what goes through your head?
Absolutely.
One, you were probably still in shock from falling off the bike to some degree. And then this?
Yeah. I mean, what I was thinking originally was, I mean, I was just thinking I need to get back to work, you know, hopefully it'll heal in a couple of weeks. And
yeah.
I mean, I wasn't at all focused. And then it was my first x-ray of my life. So then when they said it's a tumour, I was just sort of, what? You know, yeah. Come again. I had no idea, you know.
Okay.
A complete shock.
So what did they say had to happen at that point in terms of tumour, like, is the first thing you think cancer?
Yeah, and actually then I suppose the first thing they had to do really was they actually wrapped me like a mummy and my whole leg was in a cast, you know, kind of. It was actually Valentine's Day in February. That was I don't remember the exact dates now when all of it happened, but I remember meeting my boyfriend for lunch with a giant cast around my leg. It was not the best look.
I can't imagine. It
looked like a half mummy.
So what you had already booked a holiday and this was, they said to you, okay, Tanya, we're going to need to operate on this. What did that operation involve?
Basically, they wanted to take out the tumour. So it's called curettage, I think. I don't want any doctor to comment on that, but it's scraping out of the tumour, out of the bone. And I think they would put a few pins in to kind of keep it all together after they take out what's there.
Okay, but they didn't seem too concerned at the time. It was in one place. It was, and they just, it was in the bone?
Exactly.
On the bone?
It was in the bone, in the knee. And the thing was that they actually said it's, they did the test on it and everything before I went. And they said it's what they thought was a giant cell tumor, but staying in the one place and not cancerous.
Okay.
So
you were booked to go on holiday. Off you went. And
yeah, I was pretty stubborn about it. I was just like, I booked this to go to Paris. I never get to go on holidays most of the time. I'm going. And they said, well, as long as you don't do anything stupid like skiing. I said, like, I don't know how to ski. Why would I? But I went to Paris. My friend lives on the third floor. I came down to the courtyard and it was raining and I slipped on a piece of plastic and broke my leg in two places. So that wasn't really in the plan. So then I was in a cast for even longer, like a few more months, and then they did the operation.
Okay. So I did
something stupid, yeah.
Oh, dear. So what was recovery like then? You're dealing with a break, and
yeah.
You're dealing with this huge operation in terms of trying to get in and get this, and mentally you're dealing with all of it as well,
big time. I mean, I suppose at the time I would imagine I was slightly in denial, hence the fact I went on holiday as well. Like, I was just thinking I need to get this in and see my friends, and it is
sort of denial, because
it is.
So anybody listening there would be like, how could you even go on holiday? How could you be in a place where you could go on holiday when you've just been told this?
I know. I would say I'm quite different now to what I was at the time. I think it's a way where you really have to learn a lot of self-care.
Yes.
At the time, my priority was really like, you know, I know it's not cancerous. Can we do it after I come back? I can't even put myself in that mindset right now, actually.
Mm. I get it, though, because if you have to sit at home with all of this worry and self-doubt continually going on in your head, where you get out, you're busy.
You're
in Paris. I mean, okay, nobody wants to fall
on top of that. But I
understand kind of running away from it.
It is really that. Yeah, and it's a lot to do with, I think, I mean, you just want to kind of not sit at home, as you say. And I think they knew that it was going to be in about a month, the operation anyway. And I was only going for about a week, so.
Okay. Yeah. So by 2009, you'd made a good recovery.
Absolutely.
Everything seemed fine.
Yeah.
All the results came back clear.
Yeah.
So you moved to Prague. For work.
Yeah, I have some friends and family there, and as I speak the language, so it was really nice to go back and do some English teaching and salsa dancing, which I took up again.
And did you have full mobility?
At the time, okay. Yeah, because I had done a lot of physio, about half a year of just rebending the knee and everything just to get back in. And yeah, I mean, I love travel, so I just went off and tried to start a new life. I say tried because after 6 months, the tumour came back again.
In the same leg.
It came actually in the femur, so above the knee this time.
Okay.
And I found it because I was in salsa and it started to be painful, and I said, right, this, I have to get this checked. So I was a little bit more careful now to actually, you know, check it out.
Okay. And what then goes through your mind? You know, if you've had something like that, do you always think that the chance of it coming back is there?
Yeah.
You live with that.
Well, I suppose what I do now, this is obviously jumping way far ahead, but as I am now, I live in the present most of the time, as in I'm alive, I'm well. You know, I'm not going to keep thinking, is it going to come back?
Sure.
And also, I feel like having gone through it, I'm actually less scared of it.
It's
a funny thing.
Yeah.
And I think people who have gone through cancer often maybe say that.
Yeah.
It's just that thing of, well, the worst has happened and I got through it stronger, you know.
Okay.
So at the time, I knew that that was wrong, that the feeling was wrong, and it was probably come back.
Okay.
Know?
So then what happened? Did you come home?
So I came
operation?
Home to Ireland and actually had the x-ray, and they wanted to do a treatment that would kind of stop the tumour.
Were you with the same team of oncologists?
Yes,
and all that again.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
And the same surgeon and wonderful people. But like, yeah, they actually did a treatment for a year to try and see would it actually stop it. And it didn't work at the time. It just wasn't working with my body. So after that, 2010, they did an operation again.
Okay. And what did that involve?
I'm going to take a little sip of water. Sorry, Catherine.
Absolutely. So we're 2010. And can I ask you, Tanya, what age were you?
So when I actually fell off the bike in 2008, I was 23. So 23, 24, 25 now in 2010.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So they did the operation.
So they did an operation, which was this time was to replace the knee and the femur. So it's actually like, you know, people get knee replacements.
Yeah.
Usually sort of when you're older. When I was in the hospital, like the people there were saying, what are you doing here? Like at
I
your
know,
age. And honestly, like I didn't, you know, I was on my birthday as well. I definitely didn't really want to be there, but it had to be done. And I thought that was it then, you know, they'd taken it all out. But they analysed the cells and found them to be cancerous this time. That they were actually changing and getting aggressive. So they did 6 months of chemo to follow that.
Wow.
And that was a big shocker.
Yeah.
That was just that moment of, oh, you know, I'm going to lose all my hair. That's kind of your first thing. And then what else is going to happen to me?
Sure, you know? Sure.
But I got through that, like the 6 months. And I have to mention here, because apart from amazing family and friends, I have quite a big family. I have 3 sisters and 2 brothers and 8 nieces and nephews.
Okay. Who's outside there?
There's my sister, Teresa. Yeah. She came up from Galway just now. I'm really chuffed. So they were a huge supporter. My mum, Alice, who I live with, and my stepdad, Ivor. I mean, they just, I'm so lucky to have that, to be at home with that. And
you realise how lucky you are when you're in need and when you're going through something like that.
Oh, huge.
Family who support you is
amazing.
Vital.
Yeah, I feel like all of us siblings get on and we're really close. You know, we always call each other if we're not there. So that was a really big thing. And then I was able to stay at home, but also the Cancer Support Centre in Enniscorthy, they're called the Hope Cancer Support Centre. Yeah. And I just love them. So I just wanted to mention them because they're wonderful women. They're all voluntary and just, I couldn't have gotten through all that without them. You go in there like sick as a dog and they give you a blanket and a whatever you want, you know, a cup of tea and just somewhere to cry even or sit and be sick, you know, just it was okay, you know.
And how did chemo affect you? Because it affects people in so many different ways.
I'm sure. I mean, I had a very large dose, as far as I know, a very strong dose because I was young and could take it. And they really wanted to be sure it wouldn't come back at that time. I remember December I started. I went home for Christmas and it was on the Christmas meal. Like, I was getting so sick. I was like, this is typical. I love food. And it was horrible. I was actually just, you get very nauseous all the time and exhausted. At one point, I couldn't really stand up on myself. You get mouth ulcers and you lose your hair and get very, very thin and just exhausted all the time. Yeah.
And then to keep you on the right track and to keep you mentally strong and positive, as you said, you had a great network around you.
Yeah.
You had a great team of people around you. But, you know, that wobble that people talk about, you know, going, feeling that sense of hopelessness.
Yeah.
Because it was in your leg, was that, and I don't even know how to ask this question, in terms of the doctors and your team of people, there's better places to get cancer than others. And that is the most crass way of saying it. But do you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying.
Like, was the prognosis of...
Yeah. You mean the fact that it was in the leg might have been at least a bit better than if it was in the chest?
Yes.
Or absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that it wasn't moving any higher up than the leg, it was great news.
And were they able to say that it was not in your lymph nodes?
Absolutely. It wasn't going anywhere else, thankfully, you know. And as I say, they had done the operation and this was just really to really prevent it coming back, you know, and to give it a real push away.
Okay.
You know, so, and I mean, yeah, it kept it away for quite a long time after that, in fairness. And once I got through all of the treatment, I was flying for a while. The only problem was that my leg then was straight. I didn't have enough physio. I was too exhausted during the chemo. So my leg, just all the scar tissue just ended up knotting together and my knee just wouldn't bend more than 30 degrees for the next 8 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many stitches did you...
About 50.
50 stitches all up your leg.
It's about a metre long. And I kind of enjoyed evil, sometimes humour with kids, and they would say, what happened at the swimming pool? I'm like, a crocodile. And then I correct it quickly when their parents come over. But yeah, you have to find the fun in everything.
I get that sense from you that humour was probably a very important part.
Do you know, I can
from
actually,
the beginning of this journey for
very
you.
Much. And my mum has kind of got black humour. We kind of understand that together. All of our family do. And I've always been that way. One of my best friends, I think she's saying, like, you know, step aside, Sinead O'Connor, like, good luck with the bald head. It suits you. And there's all these kind of, there was all these many moments.
And you've got to embrace it. And I think when people know you and know your sense of humour, it's easier because do you find that even some people, when you did get sick, didn't know how to be around you,
Absolutely.
Didn't know how to kind of approach you?
I've met that reaction many times, and even more so now since the amputation. I mean, when people don't know you, they sometimes pity you or they don't know how to react. And to be honest, like, as I know, and from my other friends who've been sick in different ways, they say, laugh about it. It's much less awkward. Like, can we just put it out there? You know, I'd say something like, I'm going to be a flamingo for Halloween. I don't know. I haven't decided how to do that yet. You know, and when people are trying to be PC and you're like, no, laugh. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
And I even remember actually that same friend who was like at the chemo time. She's like, do you know what? I'm so depressed with my schoolwork. I'm going to go back in to see Tanya in the hospital and have a laugh. Like, genuinely. And that was true.
That's brilliant.
It doesn't mean I was a laugh a minute through it. Of course, you know, it was horrible. Like, there were days when you're so depressed.
Of course.
And there's not to make light of that, you know, but that's got me through big time. Yeah, humour is a huge thing. Yeah.
So you had that operation, and clearly, because you've talked about the amputation as well, clearly it wasn't the fix-all.
Absolutely not.
Solution.
But and did stay away for, as I say, about 7 years. Now, my maths isn't very good, but it brought us up to 2017. So let's say about that. I did have pain in my leg, but the cancer didn't come back until the all clear was at 5 years. They always give you the all clear and send you off.
Send
you don't
you
need
off,
to do any more x-rays. But I was coming back for leg x-rays because of the replacement of my knee.
Yeah.
So they had to check that. So what it was I went home into Ireland. I was working in Prague again in 2017. Came home for a check, like an x-ray of my leg, and they said, your hip is crumbling away this time.
Okay.
So it was sore, all right, but I had so much pain by then I didn't really think it was unusual. I thought it was just overexertion again. And they said, no, it's crumbling away, we're going to do a biopsy. There is a tumour again.
Okay.
So it was back. It's very unusual, but it did come back.
And in all of that time, had you thought about amputation? Had it been mentioned to you? Had you Dr. Googled it, as we all do? When,
funnily enough, I Dr. Googled chemo. It was a really bad idea at the beginning as well. Really bad.
Yeah.
Don't do it, kids. But it basically, like, when I heard about amputation, the first time I fell off the bike, actually, he said, if we hadn't caught this in time, you would have been amputated. I wonder if that stayed in my psyche until a long time later. And somehow, when it came to that point, even though it was a huge shock, like major shock, and me going, please find another way rather than losing my leg, I kind of was ready.
Okay.
In another way. It was strange. I'd had so much pain for years.
And what struck me when I read your piece was exactly that moment when the doctor said to you, we are going to have to amputate. And you said, no, like, is there any other way? And he said, well, it's your life or your limb.
Exactly. She, it was the oncologist, and she basically just said, like, kind of sadly, because I'm sure she's seen worse many times. She said, no, this isn't the worst case. You know, it's if you actually didn't have the choice, you know, you'd be, if it was in your lymph nodes, but it's not. So in a way, it's your life or your leg, and you have that.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly,
but it's such a huge, I mean, to
it's major.
Major.
Yeah.
To like your to lose your leg. And how long did you have to process that before the operation? Because obviously they want to operate as soon as
pretty
possible.
Pretty soon. But thankfully, because again, I think they were telling me, you know, we can take the month, you know, again at this time. Now, you know, they were saying they had actually removed it with, because I had an operation as soon as they came back to replace the hip. And again, you know, they were trying to save the whole leg. So then they just said, well, now we can amputate, but you do have a month before it has to be done.
So what do you do? What
I went to Croatia and travelled around Montenegro and Croatia for a month.
You are a woman after my own heart. Love it.
I just, you know, at the time I had wanted to do it for ages. I went around and it was my boyfriend at the time. I just said, look, let's go. And we went off and had a lovely trip.
And in all that, when you're hiking and you're trekking and you're walking and you're in
He was doing most of the hiking. I was not pushing myself, no.
Okay, so you're
I was in pain, yeah.
But was it throughout that trip, were you going, I'm not going to be able to do that? I'm not going to be able to do this? Or were you going, like...
Well, funnily enough, as I say, it wasn't as hard as someone who's had a really, you know, flawlessly active life until then. I had been in pain for almost 10 years, basically.
Okay.
Like, and I was able to do things, but I was limited by so much, you know, and I hadn't had a normal hiking or a normal dancing experience in a very long time. So I left him to do the hard things. And I just knew that, yeah, it would be harder coming from there, but it's funny to explain. I suppose I was nearly relieved after the amputation, like, even though I was in shock and it was horrendous, but I was relieved that the cancer was gone and I could get on with my life now.
Okay.
Like that.
Can I just bring you back to that time and that moment when you woke up and your leg's not there? Because you hear and you read different stories about the phantom pains that people have, and what was it like looking down at your body without your leg?
It's horrible.
No matter how much
put it any other way.
You prepare yourself for it, I doubt that there's anything that kind of gets over that first initial.
No, it's a horrible feeling. It's like you feel like you're not the same person anymore, and your body is so completely different. Like, how do I learn to love this again? You know, like there's no way of really describing it. You're scared to go and look in the mirror now. You know, at that moment, I mean, it's all wrapped up. It doesn't matter. Your leg's gone. It honestly looked like it was photoshopped out. Like, that was my weird impression, because my hip is gone, but like it was so kind of cleanly. Like, they did a really good job. It looked like it was just photoshopped out. But my brain took a long time to catch up, and my body did too. So I had months of, yeah, phantom pain as well.
Okay, okay.
And actually, that's one of the things that I'd love to do in the end, is to help people who are going through that, because I felt very lost at the time. And I'd love to have like a peer group, something that we could set up that would help people there.
And just try and describe what phantom pain is. It's pain in your leg that's not there.
So the pain is actually in the nerves that have been severed. Sorry for anyone, this is a horrible description, but basically it feels like your leg's being squashed.
Okay.
Like all the time, like electric shocks going through it. Everybody's different, but for me it was like that. Like it's being, I can't say, this is horrible, mangled. And you don't know how to stop it.
Okay.
And I had to take very, very strong painkillers for about a month just to try and sleep and eat. And after a while, I didn't like the fuzziness of that. So I said to find another way, and relaxation. I mean, it sounds like a cliche, but meditation, counselling, relaxation, any way I could find that would just help me out of it. Mm.
Talk to me about being fitted for your first prosthetic.
So that was, yeah, I mean, that's kind of, it's weird. It was exciting and scary at the same time. It was about 6 weeks after the amputation. My mum was with me as well. And she said, it looked like I would become like a statue. You know, those ones that don't, like, it's like the torso, because they'd put the plaster cast all around me and I had to sit very straight. And I said, like, if we could have took pictures, we would have. But it was so cool. And then they made a plaster cast of that. And that was a socket then would be made from that. Yeah, and then I came in December and they had the leg ready to go. But okay. It was terrifying because it looked like a bucket. I was going to wear a bucket from then on with a leg attached, and I was like, goodbye being a woman.
Really? Yeah.
That's what it felt like. But then
and
I got
to... And
you
put it on for the first time, yeah. And you're walking around, and like, obviously you've got to spend weeks and weeks getting used to it.
Well, actually I spent about a week learning to walk, but a couple of weeks maybe, you know, and then you come back again and again, you know, throughout the following months. But you can do a lot at home actually with crutches as well.
Okay.
But I think the woman who's teaching me to walk, again, just so lovely, and she just said, it's a really normal reaction, but then you get this is only a test leg, and then you get your normal leg, and I got to pick colours for it. So I have butterflies going all the way up.
Oh,
it's purple
do.
With butterflies.
It's got quite a cool design going down.
Yeah. I mean,
the lower part of the leg.
Yeah. I mean, I had to kind of make it look pretty. Now, it's deceptive because it's a very clunky, hard leg to use. This is why I'm here, basically. One of the reasons that I'm publicizing myself to the world, which I wouldn't have done before. I was kind of nearly hiding away after that. I'm a very sociable person, but to actually put myself out there, you get to a certain point of learning with the leg. I mean, I did it for a year and a half. I could feel the limitations. I could feel that, you know, the knee is not controlled at all. It can fall forward if I don't take care where I step. I've fallen down a few times.
Sure.
So it's well scraped up.
So you have found a new, improved leg.
Absolutely.
That you want to go and get.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
I'm very excited because I actually discovered this. Now, it's amazing. I have to say, the internet gets all sorts of slagging, and yes, of course, but there are other ways it can be amazing. And that's for me. And this is like, I could find people that inspired me from the very beginning, like amputee models, you know, who had the same as me and were just proud to stand on one leg. And so these people now are using this leg and they can do hiking, you know, they can walk without looking at their feet, which for me would be just... A
and
huge
it makes
step.
Sense that in the last number of years, the technology with prosthetics just keeps improving and improving.
Absolutely.
So how much is this leg and what do you need to do to raise the money for it?
Now, the reason now that it's actually so hard to find and expensive, this particular kind of leg, is because this hip amputation is so rare. I think it's like a tiny percentage of the world that has this. Now, they've started developing more in America, unfortunately, after the Iraq-Afghanistan wars, because of young men needing this a better leg,
yes, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And they actually now have a running leg for the hip, which didn't exist until about a year ago. So the thing with the new leg, it's called a 3D helix hip and a C-leg knee, and it's from Ottobock, which is the company that make prosthetics. And what it is it actually has sensors in the knee. It has to be charged like a mobile phone. So after 2 days of activity, I have to charge myself. I'm looking forward to that, just chilling out with my charger. But then also the hip is much more like a human hip, so you can swivel and everything. So I have
so you can dance.
This is it. And I have to mention, this is my neighbours here down up in Rathnure, and they organised a fundraising dance for me last week. And like they have a dance there anyway every week, but they did this and they raised like over 3,000 for me for my leg, and I am just blown away by how kind people are.
You have a GoFundMe page.
I do.
How much is your target to raise?
I'm just going to say Bernadette and Paddy Doolin and Marie Rally, because they organise it. So thank you so much. Sorry. And the GoFundMe page is, if anyone can put into Google Tanya's new left leg.
Tanya's new left leg. Yeah.
I have a little weight.
What's your target?
My target is 33,000 or a little bit over if possible.
Okay.
And that's how much.
And with your medical card, how much do the government come on board
yes,
and help you?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, it's 56,000 to begin with. So that's, they take off nearly about 23,000 that the medical card pay.
Okay.
So I'm left with the 33 then.
You deserve this. You deserve to dance again.
Thank
You're amazing.
You so much.
We're going to put the link on our webpage as well for anybody who wants to donate. And I have to ask you this before I let you go. Do you feel like a woman again?
I absolutely. Thank you for asking that, Catherine, because it is such an important thing. I do. And I genuinely have learned to just, I'd say, love my body the way it is. I know it sounds corny, but I genuinely
no,
do.
No, that is... That has taken a long journey to get you to say that, and it's very clear for me that that is the case.
And more than I did when I was younger. That's the irony of it. So
you're an inspiration. You're an inspiration.
And I just hope I can help other people in the same way eventually. I would love that.
Lots of texts coming in. I can relate to Tanya going on holidays. When I was diagnosed with cancer, I was training for a marathon at the time. And the first thing I asked was, can I do the Dublin Marathon before surgery? This was back in 2015. Yeah. And I have done every single one of them since. I'm now training for the Dublin Marathon in October. Keep on going, Tanya. And that comes in from Joe in Dublin.
Thank you, Joe.
What a brave, funny lady. I've worked almost 20 years with people with serious disability and I've always believed in the power of humour and laughter. Lovely to hear someone endorse that. All the best for the future.
Thank you
says
so much.
Chris. Tanya is delightful and inspirational. What a voice of positivity. That comes in from Deirdre. Listening to Tanya on the radio just now, I've watched her going through so much over the past few years and I can truly say I haven't met anyone in my career who has touched and inspired me so much. Lots of love and let the dance continue.
Thank you so
what
much.
What a fabulous text. That comes in from Bernie in Gorey.
I wonder do I know her?
Listen, what a great story. And you know, how humour is so important when you're going through what you're going through and when you keep fighting for what you want and what you need.
And to remember that if you feel bad, it's also okay. Just reach out to someone and just tell them.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much,
Best
Catherine.
Of luck with everything. And I'll be keeping an eye on this.
Thank you so much.
Back after this.
All the best.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.